Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into this edition of the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm Neil McCready, your host for the program. Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham will join us today. We'll talk some college football with him, get his thoughts on things around the SEC, around the country as well. So we'll get to that in just a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next door to the Oxford Exxon. It's now the home of the maple bourbon shake. It's delicious. It's legal in all 50 states. There's no actual bourbon in it, though. No one's stopping you from adding some if you'd like. But it's there at Crystal, and you can still get the three-egg plate combo featuring Gold Peak coffee and fresh cracked eggs every morning there at the Oxford Crystal. And then throughout the day, whether you're getting ready for a weekend of watching college football, watching college basketball, watching the NFL, whatever it may be, the $2 crystal, the $3 crystal, the $4 crystal square meal, and the 12 crystal combo, 12 crystals, two medium fries, two medium drinks, it's all there for you. And we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call Clark Ford. Tell Clark Ford what it is that you're looking for, and Corey will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's that easy. It's right to the bottom line. There's no hassle. There's no haggle. He just sends you a quote, and the rest is up to you. You get that quote, you can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of the podcast, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden, and you'll save $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory. We're also brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue, Suite E in Oxford, right across from Kroger, 662-259-2999. Call Greg Jones at LB's. Let him know what you want. Let him know what you want prepared. He'll have it ready for you. They've got so many options. I would suggest calling the number, talk to Greg, 259-2999, or go in and browse at LB today. Pork chops, sausages, bone-in ribeyes, briskets. You start to think about Thanksgiving, getting that special cut. He'll get it ready for you. Grab a six-pack on your left and six-pack of beer. Make your own six-pack, a variety pack, if you will. And tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack, normally $9, just $6 at LB's Meat Market. Now let's go to Ryan Brown, and let's talk some college football with Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham. All right, Ryan, really appreciate you taking some time here as we get ready for another weekend of college football. It's funny, we talk about this on the Oxford Exxon podcast a lot. And I'm going to guess that because of where you are in Birmingham, Alabama, that the following sentiment is not expressed there very often. Yet I'm wondering if you think deep down, maybe some people feel it a little bit. And that is a lot of people saying, man, I'm glad the NFL season is great because the college football season, while entertaining, there's no suspense. It's taken some of the fun out of it. I don't hear anybody like angry at Alabama or anything like that, but there's almost a concession of they're the best, they're going to win it. I almost wish there was another competition just so we'd have a competition. I know you don't get that in Birmingham because people are the people that are Alabama fans, which is a lot of your audience, they're loving the dynastic run that Alabama is on right now, but I'm wondering if in the back of some people's mind, people are wondering, A, is this good for college football in the long haul? And B, I'm getting a little tired of it.
You know, it's interesting. We do kind of hear the question or get to ask, is this good for college football? And Alabama fans bristle at that, and I don't blame them. But I would also point out that the highest rated college football game to date was the Alabama-LSU game the other night. Now, I know a lot of that is people tuning in hoping Alabama loses. I get it. But you knew pretty quick Alabama wasn't losing that game, and it still somehow kept a big enough audience to be number one all year. And, in fact, I don't know if you saw this, it actually almost matched the number. Both were over 11, just over 11 million of the Monday night football game, the Titans and Cowboys. So, you know, it was a pretty heavily watched game.
Yeah.
So for people that seem to think Alabama's bad for the sport, they sure tuned in to watch them. Nope. And, you know, I don't know. Listen, the sentiment you mentioned is prevalent here, but it's embraced by Alabama fans that they are the best team in the country. Nobody can play with them. And until they get to Clemson, nobody will even be close. I mean, that's kind of the feeling down here. So it's not an unusual feeling here, but it's just more embraced here than it is anywhere else.
Oh, hell yeah, and I don't blame them for feeling that way. I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, and if the Cubs can win 6 out of 10 World Series, I'm in. And I don't care how bad people I mean, I don't care how bad people would start hating the Cubs and watching the Cubs to see them lose. I would embrace the hate. I'm good. That's great. I don't – it's not – when I say it, I'm almost hesitant to do it because I don't want Alabama people to think that I'm saying – they should want their team to lose, or they shouldn't be enjoying this. They should absolutely be relishing in this because the odds are overwhelming that when this ends, it's going to be impossible for anyone, anywhere, to repeat the kind of run over the course of a now what's basically a decade plus that Nick Saban has had. I mean, it is remarkable how much they're dominating the sport, and I think. And I'm curious to get your thoughts because your opinion will be more valid than mine. I know he's had better defenses. I get that. But I do think this is his best team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And the scary thought is a lot of people feel like, believe it or not, next year's team might even be better. They return almost everything on offense next year. But I don't disagree with that assessment. The one thing I would say about the defense is they have played – they got off to a little bit of a shaky start, but after the Arkansas game against Missouri, they were pretty dominant. You know, Tennessee is very challenged on offense, but they still dominated Tennessee in that game. And then is about as dominant as I've ever seen a Saban defense against LSU. I mean, I would easily say that was among the top 10 defensive performances under Nick Saban. I mean, they just completely shut LSU down. LSU had one shot at a field goal and a throw in the end zone that got intercepted. So those were their scoring opportunities. They did almost nothing on the other side of the 50. So it is scary to think that Alabama's defense actually might be rounding into shape. And what's even scarier is some of these guys that were injured early in the preseason or early in the season might actually be coming back soon, like Chris Allen and Terrell Lewis. So if you get a little bit of depth, both those are linebackers, you get a little depth back, and it could make it even better. So the thing about it being the best offense is it's not even debatable. There's nothing you can throw out that would – I mean, they're better than they've ever been at quarterback. And while maybe they don't have a singular receiver that's Calvin Ridley or Amari Cooper or Julio Jones, I mean, Jerry Jeudy's really, really good. I'm not sure he's one of those three guys. Their group of receivers, plus the tight end Irv Smith, is easily the best grouping they've ever had at that position. And then at running back, my word, they've got four guys that would be starting just about anywhere else. And they, you know, Nick Saban has to figure out a way to split the carries up. The offensive line has allowed 6 sacks all year, and really developed into some road graders in the run game. So yeah, I don't think there's any doubt it's the best offense he's had. And if that defense continues on the path it's on right now, they'll be easily the best team Saban's had.
So they dominate LSU the other night. You're right, I watched it. I watched some of it. I actually kind of got – I did. I was one of those that got bored with it, not because Alabama did anything wrong. It was just the game was over, and you could tell the game was over. And I was interested to hear Ed Orgeron's post-game comments where – and I want to get away from the whether he should have said that about his team or not. That's for him and his team to sort out. But when he said, hey, we've got to get better on the lines of scrimmage, I wondered, and I immediately thought of you, and I look forward to asking you the question, is that the answer? Is it getting better at the line of scrimmage, or is it a lack of a quarterback? Is it lack – I mean, look, Burrow's done a nice job for them, but he's not a dynamic quarterback. the teams that I've seen give Nick Saban's teams fits over the years have been teams that, whether it was Deshaun Watson or whether it was Chad Kelly or whoever it may be, it was a dynamic quarterback who could beat you with his arm, weapons on the outside, down guys who could beat you downfield and make big plays and get the game into the fourth quarter, that kind of thing, where you had a better quarterback than Alabama did. And I don't know that right now you can have a better quarterback than Tua, but obviously Tua will eventually leave. That I don't know that the answer is just winning the, quote, matching up and beating them at the line of scrimmage.
No, I would agree. And that's really been the puzzling thing to me and to a lot of people about this Alabama-LSU series under Miles and now under Orgeron is time and time again, LSU has tried to beat Alabama at Alabama's game. They've tried to be physical, line up, and run it on Alabama. And just simply, nobody does that. I mean, you're right. The way you beat Alabama, historically it will show, the way you beat Alabama is you get elite quarterback play. You either have an elite quarterback or that quarterback is elite on the day they run up against Alabama's defense. And, I mean, if you just go look at any of the losses they've had, very few times would you say the run game was the difference. The only two, Neil, that really come to mind where I would say the run game was the difference was the kick six game where Auburn ran for, I think it was 295 in that game. They almost put 300 rush yards on Alabama.
That was Trey,
and even then, you
Trey Mason and those guys?
Yeah, Nick Marshall and Trey Mason. That's what I was about to say. You can't just discount that as, oh, well, Auburn didn't get elite quarterback play. They did. They just got it in a non-traditional system. I mean, you know, it was Nick Marshall running the zone read. He was phenomenal at that. So they did get elite quarterback play in the game. The other one that comes to mind would be the first year of the playoff when Alabama lost in the semifinals to Ohio State. And Ezekiel Elliott was really, really good in that game. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they ran for a ton of yards. He had a couple big runs in that game. That's really the only two. And again, look, they were getting elite quarterback play then. It was their third teamer that was doing it. But that was those are really the only two times where I could look at a game that Alabama has lost under Saban and said, I think the run game was really the difference there. By and large, it's elite quarterback play that day.
Yeah, that's when I heard Orgeron say it, I thought, I don't know, Ed. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I know that that's his MO. I mean, he's a big, tough guy and a legitimate – I mean, that's the way he views football, is a very physical win at the line of scrimmage, win the point of attack, all that. And I get it, and I respect that, but I thought, I don't know, man. I think you better study some analytics a little bit more, because I don't know that's how you do it. All right, moving forward a little bit, Alabama's got Mississippi State. Let me get your betting opinion on this. 26.5 points feels like a big line. I need to make up ground in my Neil's Picks competition with Chase Parham and others. I've got Alabama covering that line. Do you agree?
Well, it is awful hard to take the other side against Alabama right now. I mean, they are a covering machine, and they simply can't make the lines big enough. I mean, my word, they went on the road and doubled up the LSU line last week. That seems awful big to me. I look at it, and, you know, Fitzgerald has shown an ability to throw of late, but, you know, I'm going to discount what he did against Louisiana Tech. No disrespect to your hometown, but I'm going to discount what he did there a little bit, and I'm going to assume he's not going to be able to throw it as well against Alabama. And while he'll break off some runs against Alabama, he's not going to run wild the way he did against Auburn. So I do think it'll be difficult for them to find points, but I also think that's a really legitimate defense Alabama's about to play. Now, they haven't faced an offense like this. I understand that, but they've given up 9 touchdowns all year. And for Alabama to win that game by 25, 26 points, it's going to take, you know, a minimum, I would think, of 5 touchdowns. So you're almost – You're scoring more than half what they've given up all year. That would be a little bit shocking to me. So
yeah, but
I might play the other side as hard as it is to go against Alabama right now.
Tua gets 5 touchdowns on his first possession.
I know.
I mean,
but now think about it. You're gonna need the touchdowns because Alabama's kicking game is a total mess. So, you know, you're gonna need 5 touchdowns. I don't think field goals are gonna help you here.
I guess. All right. So they're gonna beat Mississippi State. They're gonna beat whoever they play in between Mississippi State and Auburn. They're going to beat Auburn. A year ago, the Georgia game was a classic. It was a great game. Anybody could have won it. It came down to the last play. It was awesome. It was as entertaining a football game as I think we'll see for a long time. I don't know that Georgia can do that again.
They don't feel like that team. I mean, they are missing something on defense. I don't think there's any doubt. And it's Roquan Smith. That's what they're missing. And you know, that's no surprise because he's a phenomenal NFL player. But the thing that puzzles me about Georgia is I feel like they can be really good at quarterback with Jake Fromm, but I also feel like Kirby Smart and Jim Chaney don't entirely trust Jake Fromm for some reason. It seems like, you know, and who could blame them with the running backs like Swift and Holyfield. They're really good at running the football. But it seems like they go in with that game plan of we're just going to pound it and Jake Fromm's going to be a nice game manager. And it feels like that's the role he's been relegated to as game manager. And he seems like a much better quarterback than that to me. So that takes us back to our discussion earlier. If you're just going to make Jake Fromm a game manager and you're going to try to line up with Swift and Holyfield and run it on Alabama, you're not going to do that. It's going to take Jake Fromm making plays to Riley Ridley and his receivers. And, you know, now the tight end, you know, that's – I don't know, man. They haven't trusted him to do that all year, so you're just going to throw him out there in the SEC championship game and say, all right, go win us the game. And it is – while I am not a transitive property guy and a comparative score guy, when you look at those two teams, it's hard to get out of your head what Georgia did in Baton Rouge and what Alabama did in Baton Rouge. I mean, that's hard to forget those two games if you're comparing those two teams.
It's impossible to forget. You would be a fool not. And I know what you're saying about transitive properties and all of that. I get it. But there's also an eye test. And you look at what LSU did. You see what LSU did to Jake Fromm, what LSU was able to do against Georgia's running game. And you look at what LSU could not do, the same kids, what they could not do to Tua Tagovailoa, what they could not do to Alabama's running game. There's an eye test that gets passed. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, when I look at that game, that's what I see. I mean, you're 100% right. Fromm was awful that day at Baton Rouge, and LSU could barely affect Tagovailoa. Now, to LSU's defense's defense, that's the worst game Tagovailoa's had. Now, he threw for almost 300 yards, and he was just a shade under 60% completion percentage. But they probably affected him as much as anybody, but they still only sacked him one time. And they only intercepted him once, and, you know, it actually wasn't that bad an interception by Tagovailoa. He was forcing it deep and pinned LSU down. They got it back and led to an Alabama touchdown. So, you know, even that mistake wasn't really costly for Alabama. So, you know, when you say LSU played him well, it does require some explanation to that.
So, going forward into a playoff, Alabama's going to be the one. They're going to play the four. And the four today looks like it would probably be the Michigan-Ohio State winner. Is that fair? I mean, I guess if Ohio State beat Michigan, maybe there's a debate somewhere, but I think it's the Michigan-Ohio State winner. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to allow for Oklahoma to be in there too. You know, it's that Oklahoma-West Virginia deal. It looks like they're going to play back-to-back games. So that's really interesting to me. It could completely blow up the Big 12 chances here, but I would think it's either Oklahoma, Ohio State, or Michigan. I think you could narrow it down to those three teams.
Let's take Michigan first. There's a lot of Shea Patterson interest here, most of it negative. They want to see him lose as badly as possible, mostly because his dad's insane. It's more about his dad than it is the kid. You and I talked about this when you came on the Gary Parrish show with me on Monday. I give Jim Harbaugh a ton of credit. He has put Shea Patterson in a position consistently to do well, to not make mistakes, to use his feet, to make good decisions. They've got a very good defense in Ann Arbor, and they've leaned on it, and they've gotten better and better and better. But again, back to our point about beating Alabama, to beat Alabama, you have to have a quarterback make plays. Joe Burrow has thrived all season on not making mistakes, taking what they give you, whatever. But when it came time to make plays, he couldn't do it. I think you'll see the same thing with Nick Fitzgerald on Saturday, and you'll see the same thing with the kid at Auburn, Stidham, who's had a disastrous season when they play them. So this Shea Patterson's going to be asked, if it's Michigan, to make plays. I haven't seen him make the kind of plays that you have to make to have a chance against a typical Alabama team.
Yeah, Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, there was the knock on him, you know that, in Oxford, is that he would play well, but he came up small in big games. And, you know, I don't guess it's the same knock at Michigan. I mean, just, you know, it kind of was against Notre Dame. That was game one, obviously. And they've improved since then. But, you know, he wasn't dynamic against Michigan State. I mean, that game was a pretty ugly football game. He, you know, they ran the ball and they didn't ask him to do a ton. You know, everything they did worked against Penn State. I guess you would consider that a big game. Penn State's kind of fallen off. You know, I'll believe in Shea Patterson if he goes in and plays a good game in the Horseshoe against Ohio State and gets the win there. It's at that point that I believe in him. But even still, I just don't believe they've got the pieces that it would require to beat an Alabama. And I think Jim Harbaugh also is kind of from that Les Miles school. In that Ed Orgeron school, he believes in lining it up and trying to beat you physically up front. And it's really, really difficult to do that against Alabama. And that team, that Michigan team, doesn't see a defensive front like they will see in Alabama. They don't see that all year. So for you to do that on offense against Alabama when you don't see that all year, I would have a very difficult time seeing that happen in the semifinals.
I think you're right about the Big 12. And the Big 12 represents, I think, for people like me who just, you know, we like watching college football, those games, even if they don't impact the championship, Oklahoma, West Virginia, those should be very entertaining games to watch. They're fun teams to watch. I watched West Virginia and Texas the other day. I got home from Ole Miss, South Carolina in time to see pretty much all of the second half of that game. It was entertaining. Are either one of those teams winning the national championship? No. Are they going to the playoffs? Probably not. Are they fun to watch? Yeah, they're fun to watch. West Virginia's fun to watch. Dana Holgerson's fun to watch. If it's Oklahoma, which is probably a slightly better team than West Virginia, the quarterback's really dynamic, and he's made plays all season. So has Matt Greer, Will Greer, for that matter. Can either one of those guys put up plays to at least make a playoff game quasi-interesting?
I think they can make plays offensively. Either of those defenses would just get demolished by Alabama. I would be interested because Kyler Murray, I don't think Greer would have as much success. I think Murray could because traditionally the one thing that has given Alabama trouble when it comes to elite quarterbacks is mobility with elite quarterbacks. His size would worry me a little bit. Alabama's a very big defensive front, and they knocked down a lot of passes. So his size would worry me a little bit if I were Oklahoma. And yet, again, I'm just going to say it, they don't ever see a defensive front like that in the Big 12. I mean, there's nothing close in the Big 12. So, and I'm not just talking about defensive front size. I'm talking about defensive front speed. You talk to most anybody in college football, they'll tell you the thing that sets the SEC apart is they've got defensive linemen that are bigger than anybody else's that run like linebackers in any other league. So, you know, you don't ever see that type of speed with the big guys up front. I think it's hard to react to it in a single game situation. So I think Oklahoma might score a little bit more because of the mobility of Kyler Murray and the fact that he can extend plays and keep his team on the field, but I don't think either one of them could get within two touchdowns of Alabama because of their defense.
Okay, so you leave me with Clemson, and then we're going to get off the Alabama topic in a moment. If it's who I think it is, it's Clemson against Alabama for the championship. Personally, I've watched Clemson some. They're a nice team. Dabo's done a great job. I don't think this is one of his elite teams. If I tell you the line on that game is 13.5, do you take Clemson in the points or do you lay them?
Well, the most recent line I've seen is 9. So I guess with that piece of knowledge, I might go ahead and take Clemson and lay the points. But, you know, Lawrence has played very, very well. He looks like he can be elite. But, again, I'll go back to we haven't seen him challenged. And I don't know that Boston College is enough to challenge him in Chestnut Hill. The one time I saw him get challenged is almost unfair to judge him. It was Syracuse, but that was his first start, really. That was the week that they announced he's starting and Kelly Bryant is, you know, not starting and Bryant left. And Lawrence went out of that game hurt. But before he went out hurt, they were struggling to block Syracuse's front four. And he was getting pressure on him. I mean, the whole reason he got hurt was he had been flushed and was having to scramble and didn't get out of bounds. So, you know, that sticks with me a little bit, but it's also a little bit unfair to judge him there because that was his first start. So, you know, I know he's gotten better than that, but having not seen him challenged, that Alabama defense would be infinitely better than anything they have seen all year. I would still like Alabama in that game. 13.5 is an awful lot in a national championship game. So I might go Clemson there.
All right, let's get away from Alabama for a minute. I want to get to Auburn. I want to get your thoughts on two or three other SEC teams, just kind of your thoughts in general on where their programs are headed from your perspective, because I know you watch as much, if not more, college football than anyone I know. A lot of talk about Auburn over the last few weeks about whether Gus Malzahn could survive this season. He beat Ole Miss. That silenced it some. He somehow beat Texas A&M. That silenced it even more. Jay Tate was talking to Alan Green the other day, and Alan Green said that Gus Malzahn will be Auburn's coach in 2019. If that's the case, Gus probably has to make changes. I think he loses to Georgia. He loses to Alabama. So we're talking 7-5, going to a bowl game, a disappointing season for Auburn, considering what they'd kind of hoped to do going into it. There's a lot of talk about Hugh Freeze, the former Ole Miss coach, being the offensive coordinator at Auburn. You're closer to it now, being in Auburn. I mean, being in Birmingham, closer to Auburn. Does that pass the smell test to you, Hugh Freeze to Auburn? And if it happened, two things: would Gus Malzahn allow Hugh Freeze to really operate the offense? In other words, would he meddle? And then secondly, Hugh Freeze has not, Greg Sankey hasn't wanted Hugh Freeze in the league. Would Greg Sankey allow Freeze in the league with no limitations, or do you think there would have to be some real soul searching?
You know, I think now that Ole Miss is on the other side of the sanctions, I think Greg Sankey would be more open to Freeze being in the league. I don't know if caveats is the right word, but maybe with the understanding that, guys, look, this is a coach that got a program of ours on a pretty major probation because of recruiting tactics. We are watching you closer than we would watch anyone. So understand, if you're going to hire him, there is going to be zero tolerance with him. I could see Greg Sankey doing that. Now, what does that mean? How is that, you know, how does it impact Auburn? How is it even enforced? I don't know. But I do think Sankey would be okay with him being back in the league. I don't think he intends on banning him forever. I don't think there's a lifetime ban. You know, to me, the more difficult question to answer is, what would it look like if Hugh Freeze was the offensive coordinator at Auburn? Gus Malzahn has never allowed any offensive coordinator just free reign. I mean, Gus Malzahn, up until very late in the Rhett Lashley era, which I say that era like Auburn, Malzahn's been at Auburn forever. He hasn't. But, you know, he called all the plays. And at one point, the offense had gotten bad, and Malzahn felt like maybe it would take some pressure off if he, quote-unquote, let Rhett Lashley call the plays. Well, it turned out that Lashley wasn't calling all the plays, and Malzahn was still, you know, very heavy-handed in the offense. So, you know, it's been one of those deals where it's just never – it's never been 100% somebody's offense other than Gus Malzahn's. He's so heavy-handed in the play calling and the game planning. And ultimately, that's – if you're Auburn, it's why you hired him. You hired him to be that guy, so – you know, don't you? Isn't that the guy you want? So, I would seem to think, I would continue to think that Gus Malzahn would still be very heavy-handed, even if it is Hugh Freeze calling the plays. I don't know that they get any, you know, that Hugh Freeze has any more liberty than any other offensive coordinator had. The other interesting thing, Neil, real quick, is, you know, the whole reason we know that Greg Sankey doesn't want Hugh Freeze in the league is because Nick Saban wanted Hugh Freeze as an offensive consultant, offensive analyst. Well, if Mike Locksley takes another job, Dan Enos is the quarterback coach. It would be a very popular hire for offensive coordinator. But if you didn't hire him, might Nick Saban actually look at Hugh Freeze? And that would be fascinating if both of them were kind of in the same market for the same head coach or same offensive coordinator.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Hugh Freeze's daughter is at Auburn. There's a connection there. He's got
and he and Malzahn are really good friends, and they might be good enough friends that Malzahn knows it's not a good idea, or that Freeze knows it's not a good idea. Yeah. I mean, they might be close enough that Freeze says, yeah, you know what, I'll pass. And again, let me, you know, Freeze is obviously, he's a very confident guy in his offensive philosophy, but you can't, if you come in next year, you can't think it's anything but maybe a 1-year deal. There are no guarantees even though Alan Green said he's the coach of the future, I don't think any reasonable coach would think you're coming in for what is guaranteed to be a long-term deal as an Auburn coordinator.
Nick Saban would be better for Hugh Freeze because I think Nick Saban would control some of the – and when I say off-the-field stuff, I don't mean the stuff that everybody talks about. I'm talking about like his Twitter feed and some of that stuff that I think gets him in trouble, that makes him a polarizing figure, because I think people – I know people look at that stuff when you get super religious and super pious on the internet, and I think people get turned off to that. I think Nick Saban would just shut it down. That's what he would do. I think he would just kill it. He'd say, you're not going to do that here.
Yeah, and it's just now that Alabama assistants are even on social media, and it's all recruiting. I mean, the whole reason they're on there is because Nick Saban has realized, okay, you know, this helps me in recruiting. And that's the way Nick Saban views everything, what helps in recruiting the most. So it's just now that they are actually on social media, and they are not very active on it. I mean, you look at Lane Kiffin now and Lane Kiffin when he was at Alabama, and you can see Nick Saban's philosophy on an assistant coach being on social media.
Speaking of Hugh Freeze, the program that he left behind, Ole Miss, is it has had some struggles this season. I mean, they're 5-4 heading to Texas A&M this weekend. I know it because they're not bowl eligible and stuff. They haven't been on the radar all that much for guys like you that talk SEC. But you've watched them. What have you thought of their program? When you look at Ole Miss from the outside, looking in, what do you see?
You know, I was pleasantly surprised at Matt Luke. You know, when they went to play Auburn, they were 5-2 team. Or when Auburn went to play them, excuse me, they were a 5-2 team. And I would not have bet through seven games that they would be 5-2. And that Texas Tech win looks better as the year goes. I mean, Texas Tech isn't great, but they're not a two-win team either.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think by and large, Matt Luke has done a good job. I mean, obviously the losses have gotten away from him. The Alabama loss was a total beatdown. The LSU loss got away from him. The Auburn loss was probably maybe not totally indicative of the way that game was played. You know, I like Tamu, and I like what he's able to do. It's just, obviously, when you run up against a good defense and he can't be protected, he's really got no hope. And that's what happens against an Auburn and against an LSU and certainly against an Alabama. So, you know, that is one of those where, obviously, that's Matt Luke's position. They've got to be better in the offensive front. I've been surprised at how well they've run the football. You know, this under Hugh Freeze that way. I mean, I don't tell anybody that's listening to this that was the Achilles heel. They never had a good traditional run game under Hugh Freeze. I think they've been better at that under Matt Luke. So, I mean, I don't know how to grade it, but it's better than I thought it would be. It's better than I thought Matt Luke would do in year one.
When you look at their defense from the outside, this is the big debate, you know, what happens with Wesley McGriff. When you look at Ole Miss's defense, do you see they're giving up 500 yards a game? It's been consistent. They just get lit up. Is it talent? Is it scheme? Or is it both?
It's hard to know about the talent. I mean, they don't appear to be obviously on the same talent level as the elite of the SEC, but I don't know that I necessarily 100% expected them to be. I see a lot of guys running wide open, and to me that's confusion, right? And it appears, I mean, anybody can run the ball on them. So, you know, you wonder, are the run fits right, or are they just not physical up front? So, you know, it's hard for me to say. In the passing game, it seems like you're able to hit some open receivers. And in the run game, there is just zero resistance. I just cannot imagine that they have that much of a lack of physicality up front. It's got to be the run schemes and the run fits that just never match up, and they're easy to scheme against, apparently. I just cannot believe, as bad as they are against the run, that it is 100% physical.
The other team I wanted to ask you about before I let you go, my daughter is going to the Arkansas-LSU game this weekend. It's her third SEC game ever, which I'm not sure what that says about me as a parent. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's not. She's lived in an
SEC. Well, my daughter has been to one. So, you know, she's 14, though, so she's got some time to go.
Yeah, she's got to close the gap, but the gap's not very big. We knew Arkansas would struggle this year. We knew Chad Morris, a totally different system than Brett Bielema, all that stuff. When you look at them, do you see it being hopeless, or do you see some signs of progress? Because Morris is really trying to sell progress.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe if they get Kelly Bryant, I still don't know that Kelly Bryant is a program-changing quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback. But, you know, is their record better this year than with Kelly Bryant? Yeah. But are they, you know, maybe a 6-6 or 7-5? Probably. I guess it gives me more appreciation for what Bob Petrino actually did there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you go back to the 2011 season, Arkansas might have been the third best team in the entire country. The only problem was the two other best teams were in the West. They were Alabama and LSU. And that Arkansas team was a really good football team. So I guess I need to, as bad as Petrino looks right now at Louisville, I guess I need to appreciate more of what he did at Arkansas there. I think that's the toughest, might be the toughest job in the conference. I mean, you don't see a ton of talent come out of that state recruiting-wise. So they're having to go try to battle Texas and the state of Texas, try to battle all those teams that are recruiting there or maybe over in Oklahoma. And, I mean, I just think it's going to be more and more difficult to get talent to come there. And I don't know, man. I don't have a whole lot of hope that he gets that thing turned around. I think they're going to perennially be, you know, a really good year as 8-4. And I don't know if they're willing to accept that or not, but I just don't think I don't think that's a program that's ever going to compete the way it did under Bob Petrino.
It does show you what a job he did. It really does. Because you're right. In 2011, in a normal SEC year, they might have played for a championship. So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Any other year, that team, you drop that team in any other year, and they're battling for the West. And they just couldn't measure up to Alabama and LSU, but it turned out nobody could. I mean, they're the two best teams in the country.
Okay, I know you got to go. I spent the last two seasons very privately thinking to myself, hey, Neil, when the Cubs steal Bryce Harper, be nice to Ryan because he's always been nice to you. And now the Cubs are not going to get Bryce Harper, and my son is devastated. He really is. He's kind of down about it. You can see it in his eyes. Do you harbor any hope that the Nationals will re-sign him, or do you think he's gone?
I was reading Bob Nightingale this morning in USA Today, and he says it's all but done with the Phillies. And
saw that.
Apparently at the end of the season, the last regular season day, the Nationals made him a $30 million a year offer, and Boris wanted a 13-year contract, which just seems insane. 13 years? And the Nationals just weren't willing to budge. They weren't going to give a guy who is a phenomenal player, there is no doubt, but can be a little inconsistent average-wise, always great power-wise, but has been hurt a lot. A 13-year contract. You cannot deny that injuries are a concern with Bryce Harper. He's been hurt a lot. I mean, I've watched it. That's going to hurt, though, if he's getting that in the same division and you've got to face him 19 times a year. I mean, I'm not going to have any ill will because he's done a lot for the franchise, and I get the business aspect of it, but I also appreciate the fact that the Nationals said, hey, here is our best offer. We're not going to play the Scott Boris game. We're not going to get frozen out in free agency because we're waiting for you to come to the table and you never come. We're going to give you our offer and then we're going to move on. And it appears that's what's happening. It appears the Nationals will now have to face him 19 times a year. And it appears the Phillies are going to be a force to be dealt with in the National League going forward. But, you know, I kind of like the way my franchise played it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. The power of sports and hope is in the following story. And this, I'll leave you with this. As Carson, who has pretty much been – he was the kid that walked up to the Cubs convention, walked up to Theo Epstein in front of a camera and a microphone and said, when can I get my Bryce Harper jersey? That was my son. he is – as he slowly accepts the reality of Bryce Harper going somewhere besides Chicago, he read a blurb that said the Cubs are more enamored with next year's free agent class, which includes Nolan Arenado. He has now begun the one-year obsession with the Rockies third baseman. So it just shows you that that's the one great thing about sports, that even if you're LSU, for example, even when Alabama just pounds you, you think, well, there's always next year. And eventually,
That's right.
Next year happens. The day will come that LSU will beat Alabama in a football game.
Yeah, it's going to happen. The problem is there's no free agent. Well, there's limited free agency in college football. LSU can't go get the free agent quarterback that evens that series up, but you better believe the Phillies could go get a free agent right fielder that makes them a power in the National League. They look like they're about to do it.
You better believe that LSU's trying to go out and buy themselves a quarterback. Whether they can get one or not, I don't know. But I guarantee you they're out looking. Hey, thanks for the time.
Their track record, the track record's not good. Track record is not good for them doing that.
It is not good. They have not gotten much return on the dollar. Hey, I know you got stuff to do. I really appreciate your time. It's always fun.
It's always fun, Neil. Thank you, man.
Talk to you soon. That was Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham. Always fun to visit with him. One of my favorite people in sports journalism. This podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's JLOWE, J-L-O-W-E, at CommunityMTG.com. We're also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency. It works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and created uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see how great they are. It's Austin at StrategicPartnersMedia.com. Again, Austin at StrategicPartnersMedia.com. So again, our thanks to Ryan Brown. My plan is to come back next week, working on Edward Ashoff, I believe, is in line to be a guest next week. Going to talk to him. Still working on some NBA stuff. The Grizzlies, Memphis Grizzlies, off to a very good start, coming off a win earlier this week off the Denver against the Denver Nuggets. They look like a team that could make a basketball season interesting in Memphis again. So we'll talk some NBA soon. The NFL season heading into the second half. Interesting as always. So a lot to get to, and we'll do it here on the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. Thanks for listening today. Again, thanks to Ryan Brown. Thanks to the Oxford Crystal, all our advertisers. Please get out and support them and tell them that you heard about them on the Beer Garden. So until next week, take care.